Welcome to Hope's Garden and the Bridegroom Speaks podcast with Laura Ercolino.
Hello, dear friends of the Bridegroom. In today's podcast episode, I'm going to share with you an excerpt from C.S. Lewis's sermon, The Weight of Glory. This sermon has been so important and transformational in my own spiritual journey and in my coming to understand just how the Bridegroom loves me and how I am called to respond to that love, not just in my love for him, but in my love for all those whom he entrusts to me. And so today I'm going to just share a few paragraphs of this sermon and my reflections on those. I hope that you enjoy them and that your hearts are also blessed by C.S. Lewis's The Weight of Glory. In the end, that face, which is the delight or the terror of the universe, must be turned upon each of us, either with one expression or with the other, either conferring glory inexpressible or inflicting shame that can never be cured or disguised. I read in a periodical the other day that the fundamental thing is how we think of God. By God himself, it is not. How God thinks of us is not only more important, but infinitely more important. Indeed, how we think of him is of no importance except insofar as it is related to how he thinks of us. It is written that we shall stand before him, shall appear, shall be inspected. The promise of glory is the promise, almost incredible and only possible by the work of Christ, that some of us, that any of us who really chooses, shall actually survive that examination, shall find approval, shall please God. To please God, to be a real ingredient in the divine happiness, to be loved by God, not merely pitied, but delighted in, as an artist delights in his work, or a father in a son. It seems impossible, a weight or burden of glory, which our thoughts can hardly sustain. But so it is. That you are a real ingredient in the divine happiness. That you exist because just the thought of you made God so happy that he loved you into being. That's the glory that we're created for. The meaning and purpose of our lives. It's not found in other people. It's not measured by our success, our accomplishments. Your worth is because you bring God delight. Because your very existence is a praise to his glory. That's the weight of glory, the burden that we bear. And if we turn then to the very end, meanwhile, the cross comes before the crown. There is no resurrection without the cross and the death, right? There is no crown of glory without persevering in running the race. A cleft has opened in the pitiless walls of the world, and we are invited to follow our great captain inside. The following him is, of course, the essential point. That being so, it may be asked what practical use there is in the speculations in which I have been indulging. I can think of at least one such use. It may be possible for each to think too much of his own potential glory hereafter. It is hardly possible for him to think too often or too deeply about that of his neighbor. The load or weight or burden of my neighbor's glory should be laid on my back, a load so heavy that only humility can carry it, and the backs of the proud will be broken. It is a serious thing to live in a society of possible gods and goddesses, to remember that the dullest and most uninteresting person you can talk to may one day be a creature which, if you saw it now, you would be strongly tempted to worship, or else a horror and a corruption such as you now meet, if at all, only in a nightmare. To me, this echoes John Paul II and his teachings on givenness and learning to see one another as God sees us, as gift, as an ingredient in the divine happiness. Purity of heart is to see one another as God sees us, beginning with ourselves, but always going out to seeing our neighbor, to seeing everyone else, to seeing this weight of glory in everyone we meet, and understanding that all our lives are intertwined, interconnected in Christ, that we all live and breathe and have our being in him. And so with everyone I meet, I have that burden of looking with the eyes of Christ and seeing the gift in them, not seeing them as someone or something, as an object of use, to be used, as someone or something here to do something or give something to me, but what can I give to them? Can I see the gift in them and help them to see the gift that they are? That's the weight of glory. Am I going to help each person I meet today to realize the glory they have been created for, to help them to become more and more Christ-like? Or am I going to influence them to go the other way, as he says, to become a horror and a corruption that you would only see in a nightmare? Each one of us is called to that glory, to shine with the light of Christ, to be pure and blameless in his sight, each and every one of us without exception. Am I going to help those I meet to find the light of Christ in them, to shine as he shines? Or am I going to lead them further into the darkness? All day long, we are in some degree helping each other to one or other of these destinations. It is in the light of these overwhelming possibilities. It is with the awe and the circumspection proper to them that we should conduct all our dealings with one another, all friendships, all loves, all play, all politics. There are no ordinary people. You have never talked to a mere mortal. Nations, cultures, arts, civilizations, these are mortal. And their life is to ours as the life of a gnat. But it is immortals whom we joke with, work with, marry, snub, and exploit. Immortal horrors or everlasting splendors. This does not mean that we are to be perpetually solemn. We must play, but our merriment must be of that kind, and it is, in fact, the merriest kind, which exists between people who have, from the outset, taken each other seriously, have seen one another as gift from God. No flippancy, no superiority, no presumption. And our charity must be a real and costly love, with deep feeling for the sins, in spite of which we love the sinner. No mere tolerance or indulgence, which parodies love as flippancy parodies merriment. Next to the Blessed Sacrament itself, your neighbor is the holiest object present to your senses. Next to the Blessed Sacrament itself, your neighbor, and who did Jesus say our neighbor is? Anyone we meet, everyone we pass in the street, every cashier at the grocery store. Next to the Blessed Sacrament, everyone is the holiest object presented to your senses. If he is your Christian neighbor, he is holy in almost the same way. For in him also, Christ, there latet, the glorifier and the glorified, glory himself is truly hidden. Your Christian neighbor is a tabernacle, a monstrance. Christ, the Holy Trinity, dwells within him. That's how we must learn to look upon one another. That's the weight of glory that we bear. We have been given to one another as gifts from the Father, the giver of all that is good. What a difference it would make if we all learned to look at one another in that way. And to look in the mirror first and be able to say, you have been given to me. You radiate the light of Christ. You are here to be a praise to his glory. And so you are beautiful and worthy. You are wholly beautiful, my love, and without a blemish, not by your own doing, but because you were created in Christ. And by his life, death, and resurrection, you are glorified. You are washed clean. You are made beautiful and without a blemish.
For more resources and our consecration to Christ the Bridegroom, visit hopesgarden.com, the sanctuary where the spousal love of Christ the Bridegroom heals hearts, marriages, and families. You may also want to join our community powered by Mighty Networks. Download the Mighty Networks app and find us at Hope's Garden.